I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is the treatment of patients with metastatic breast cancer and the current National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines for care. We'd like to thank the National Comprehensive Cancer Network for accrediting and for collaborating with Discovery Health on the content of this program, as well as our supporters, AstraZeneca, Genentech, GlaxoSmithKline, and Pfizer. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post-test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn free credit for the program, so do it today. We're fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts in the studio with us today to talk about caring for patients with metastatic breast cancer. Dr. John H. Ward, Huntsman Cancer Institute at the University of Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah. Dr. Beryl McCormick, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, New York, New York. And Dr. William Gradishar, Robert H. Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center of Northwestern University, Chicago, Illinois. Thank you all for joining us today. During the next hour, we will identify first-line and subsequent-line endocrine therapy options for patients with hormone receptor-positive cancer. We'll identify treatment options for trastuzumab-exposed patients. We'll discuss single-agent and combination therapies, including biologic agents being evaluated in clinical trials. We'll discuss counseling patients about some of the risks and benefits of therapeutic options, and we'll discuss the appropriate use of supportive care options. Now, one of the most important issues in the care of women with metastatic breast cancer is how to individualize treatment. We'll be talking today about what goes into making an individualized treatment plan and how to direct therapy according to a woman's specific situation. But first, doctors, can you explain how caring for a woman with metastatic breast cancer is different from caring for a woman with an earlier stage of the disease?
Certainly. When we have patients with earliest stages of the disease is in the breast or in the regional nodes, our primary goal is to cure the patient, have the cancer not come back. However, if we have a patient who has disease beyond the breast and the lymph nodes to the bones or the liver at diagnosis, or we have someone that went through curative treatment often years ago and the disease comes back, then we really are talking about managing a stage 4 breast cancer. And the goal is really no longer cure. We're really trying very hard, first of all, to keep her comfortable, keep her quality of life as high as it can be, manage her symptoms from the disease, and do a great job of balancing this with all of the side effects of our treatments. I think the good news for patients with stage 4 disease and their families, though, is unlike some of the other cancers that we all treat, there are so many options for women out there with metastatic breast cancer. They stay alive often for a long period of time, and I often tell my patients it's almost like having a chronic disease.
Because this is a chronic disease and because it cannot be cured when it comes back, we have to think a lot about the toxicity of treatment versus the benefit. So just because we can do something doesn't mean we should do something. Many of our treatments are toxic. But the benefit may be quite palpable and dramatic. We always have to decide if the toxicities of what we're doing are worth the benefit to be derived. And as Beryl said, Dr. McCormick said, many of these women live for years, so quality of life becomes of paramount importance.
Well, Dr. Ward, can you predict which women who are diagnosed with non-metastatic breast cancer might develop metastatic cancer?
Yes, most women do present with localized cancer, and we do try and predict who is likely to recur. And some of the factors that help us predict that are the size of the tumor. The larger the tumor, the higher the risk. If lymph nodes are involved, the risk of recurrence is higher. So those are two of the primary things we look at. Other things we look at are whether or not the tumors express hormone receptors or whether they express overexpress something called HER2, which is a marker of aggressiveness. Usually, if we think about the size, the number of lymph nodes, and some of these biochemical markers, we can predict which women may be at higher risk and devise strategies to try and minimize the chance of the cancer recurring.
And John has described some of the classic things that we typically look for in terms of clinical parameters that help give us clues as to who might develop a recurrence. We're also entering an age where we start to look at genomic profiles, look at gene expression of tumors. And that helps us, I think, refine our thinking about which patients might be more at risk for developing disease recurrence. And there are a number of those assays that we now employ on a daily basis that I think have really sort of changed. And one of the upsides, certainly from the standpoint of early-stage breast cancer, which really isn't the topic today, is we're able to also refine who really needs therapy. In other words, we can look at the pool of patients with early-stage disease and potentially not give them therapy if they don't really need it, and as a result, not expose them to the side effects of therapy that they don't really need. I was going to just add the point, too, that Beryl talked about at the outset, and that is the challenge of talking to patients with newly diagnosed metastatic breast cancer, the challenge of trying to tell them at the outset that, you know, this is a disease that we're going to try and manage, not necessarily cure, and that the trajectory of their clinical course may be a series of therapy over time with the hope that each one is going to provide benefit, but at the same time, a realistic idea that we're going to be changing therapy as the disease changes. And I think John amplified that point by looking at each patient individually, trying to figure out, is it an older patient? Is it somebody with comorbidities, other illnesses, and tailor the appropriate therapy to that patient and their disease?
Well, a lot of today's discussion will focus on the NCCN guidelines for the treatment of metastatic breast cancer. Here's a brief introduction to the guideline process. The NCCN clinical practice guidelines in oncology are crucial to improving the quality of care for patients living with cancer. NCCN's guidelines program is considered the gold standard for oncology care in the U.S.
As an academic physician, I really value my participation on NCCN guideline panels, particularly to have the opportunity to interact with colleagues in a multidisciplinary setting to have an impact on the care of cancer patients.
The NCCN guidelines are developed by 44 panels of physicians whose expertise spans more than 100 diseases in the oncology spectrum. The guidelines are updated continuously with new data and recommendations by leading physicians and other clinicians from the 21 NCCN member institutions.
Since the goal is to provide the best outcome for an individual patient, we can achieve that only by looking at the entire course of treatment for that individual patient.
The most up-to-date guidelines can be found online at nccn.org. All of the NCCN guidelines are available online at nccn.org, including the ones we'll be discussing today. Now, what do the guidelines say about detecting metastatic breast cancer and how to start the initial workup?
So most women who present with breast cancer do not have metastatic disease, but we monitor them to determine if there are symptoms that suggest we should further evaluate them. The NCCN encourages history and physical examination every 4 to 6 months for the first 5 years and then yearly thereafter. We encourage yearly mammograms. If women are on tamoxifen, an anti-estrogen drug, we encourage a yearly gynecologic assessment. And in postmenopausal women, we encourage monitoring of bone density. We are not particularly aggressive compared to other people in terms of ordering blood tests or scans. We believe the right time to use those is at a time when a symptom or a historical finding or a physical finding prompts us to investigate further.
In fact, there was a study done in Italy a number of years ago looking at patients who finished their primary breast cancer treatment. Half of the women in that study actually did have imaging aggressively every 6 to 12 months, bone, liver, brain, and half of the patients did not. And the conclusion of that study was that the patients did equally well whether they were aggressively imaged or not, and certainly the anxiety level of the patients who were imaged was much higher than in the group that was just followed.
And I think that last point is important because unlike other diseases, say like germ cell tumors or even colon cancer in follow-up, the use of markers for breast cancer or routine imaging in the absence of symptoms makes the patient very anxious. They're anticipating results. And using the example of markers, they can go up and down, and it doesn't necessarily mean that the disease is present. Getting tests that aren't really triggered by symptoms has failed to demonstrate that you really improve outcome by initiating a therapy earlier by a couple of weeks or a couple of months. So I think unless the test is going to help us take care of the patient, there's really no evidence that it really provides a benefit.
So what else do we need to know before you can complete the treatment plan?
I think the most important piece of information is the symptom that the patient had really leading to a diagnosis of stage 4 breast cancer? So I think there is appropriate imaging depending on whether it's a bone pain or headache. But certainly at Memorial Sloan Kettering, we like, if at all possible, to have a tissue diagnosis, a biopsy, to actually establish this is really what it is. And at that point, I think some of the other pieces of information that will help us go forward include previous treatment that the patient may have already had, her menopausal status, her age, her overall performance status, her KPS, and I think also the goals of her and her immediate family. What are they really looking for now that this has become a stage 4 breast cancer?